Megan, America great again. Rapinoe leads the USA to World Cup glory. We'll look back on an amazing month in France with Kate Borsay from the Offside Rule podcast. In the Copa America, Brazil proved to be too much for the nation with the best kit in football. There's also a red card for Leo Messi. I was in my 20s last time that happened. And in Africa, the second most amazing story about Madagascar continues to develop. Sadly, this one remains bereft of wisecracking militarised penguins, but it's still pretty good. Plus, Frank Lampard finally takes Roman's reins at Chelsea. Paul Pogba is still at Man United. And Gary Monk, we'll leave that until we've spoken to the lawyers. I'm Ian McIntosh, and this is the Totally Football Show. It's a big hello to Optus, Duncan Alexander.
Hi, Ian.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Excellent. Alvaro Romeo is here, commentator for TalkSport International.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, not as good as you. You're just back off holiday, aren't you?
Yes, 2 weeks in Greece. When I went there, they had Tsipras as a prime minister, and today they have a new one.
They definitely don't now, do they?
Yes.
Landslide. There's also been a restructuring Greek football. I'm sure you're all over that, reading the local newspapers.
The thing that surprised me the most over there is probably the amount of Portuguese and Spanish coaches that there are. It's unbelievable. I mean, there are 4 Portuguese coaches and 3 Spanish coaches in the league, which makes it a very Iberian league in some sort of way, yeah.
That news on the restructure, the Super League, going from 16 teams to 14, and the newly named Super League 2, which will only have 12 teams. I knew all that already, didn't have to look it up. Duncan, can you give me an entirely spontaneous statistic about Greek football?
Greek players in the Premier League have scored 56 goals, which is one more than Blackpool.
Outstanding.
Now, which of those would you prefer to go to on holiday?
Blackpool has got the roller coaster.
That is
Greece has got the weather.
Yeah, 50-50. No.
Yeah, we'll come back on that one. We'll keep considering that. All right, more on that later. It's time to talk about this.
That's it. US wins their 4th World Cup.
Yep, the USA retained their crown as Women's World Cup champions, beating the Dutch 2-0 in the final in Lyon on Sunday. Day before that, England lost 2-1 to Sweden in the 3rd-4th place playoff, meaning that just like the men's team in Russia in 2018, the Lionesses end with more of a meow than a roar. So, how was the tournament overall? And what next for the women's game? Kate Borsay, the host of our Offside Rule podcast, she's been in the jazz basement every single night of the tournament. This is the most daylight she's seen in a month. Kate, how are you feeling?
I've still not seen any daylight because I'm down here again. Okay. It was a great tournament. And I think, you know, forget about the fact that England finished 4th, because I'm desperately trying to forget that fact. I think in a few months' time, we won't even remember that. We won't even think about that. We'll think about that great game, that great semi-final against the USA. And we'll think about how awesome the USA are and that we shouldn't feel intimidated by that. We should feel pleased and grateful that they're at a stage where investment from, you know, kids upwards is really paying off. And there's a massive message there for us. And this, and I'm so passionate about this as well, because of something called Title IX, American kids, they have to have equal opportunities in sport. So that means if you offer men's soccer, then you have to offer women's soccer. That's instilled from a young age. I'm really going off on one here. But the result of that means that girls are playing soccer because they are made to play soccer. It has to be available from like the age of 12, 13 upwards. And that's why they're so awesome. They've been playing for so long.
And now this sport has got a real trailblazer there in Megan Rapinoe.
Yes.
Who is dragging the sport forward in a way that I can't recall any male footballer ever doing, really. That she's come out in this press conference and she said, that's it, there's no more talk over equality. Now we've got to actually do stuff. She's an incredible figure.
She's a great character, and she's taken this World Cup by the scruff of the neck. She's basically said, I don't care what you all think. This is me. This is what I stand for. She's had an ongoing dispute with Donald Trump throughout the whole thing about whether she gets invited to the White House or not. She doesn't want an invite. She's told him she doesn't want an invite. And Trump said, well, before you start talking about that, you better start winning.
She did that, didn't she?
She did do that indeed, and she still won't go to the White House. Look, she is not just an awesome footballer, and that's important, by the way. If you're going to talk this much, you have to back it up on the pitch. Of course you do. But she's not just an awesome talker. She stands for LGBT issues. She stands for equal rights. And she's at the point in her career now where she's in her, I think she's 33, 34, about to be 35, I think. And she's at the point in her career where she's out to convey a message and to help with the legacy of it. And that's really exciting for her, because she does, you know, stuff like, so when all the English people got a bit of their knickers in a twist about the Alex Morgan tea celebration. So when the USA scored against England, Alex Morgan sipped this tea, right? Apparently it's got nothing to do with England, but the English took umbrage to him. We're like, how dare you take the mickey out of our national drink? This is awful. and there was a big hoo-ha about it. Anyway, Megan Rapinoe was asked about it. And the first thing she said, basically said, how do you feel about the English, you know, really, really taking umbrage to this? And the first thing she said was, wah, wah, wah. Like, literally, right. Shut up, please.
I mean, in that, she does have a point, doesn't she? If you're offended by someone pretending to drink tea, then I think the outside world is going to be too much for
and
you.
And how ace that we're talking about audacious goal celebrations rather than a rubbish goalkeeping mistake or a referee getting it wrong. Something like VAR has obviously massively dominated this competition as well. But it's great that you know, and actually VAR tends to have, well, I think FIFA must have had a meeting after the group stages about how awful VAR was and how it was interrupting games, because it did start to get better throughout the World Cup. And actually the majority of later decisions were, you know, agreed upon by generally everyone watching. But it's great that we're talking about, you know, really passionate females standing up for equal rights and also trying to push the game forward. Because although, you know, in this country right now, there is a tidal wave in that we are, you know, talking about getting our daughters engaged, getting our nieces engaged, getting our nephews engaged. Although that's happening, it's going to be some time before we don't have to talk about it, if you see what I mean. It's going to be some time before we have to stop making an effort and it just becomes normal for girls to play football.
We need the momentum now, don't we?
Because
we've got record TV audiences for the Lionesses games. Yeah. We've got this buzz about the team. We've got the fact that this World Cup, as well as England did, and they did very well, and they all deserve great congratulations for that. It wasn't really about them, the World Cup. It was about this massive breakthrough into the mainstream.
Yeah.
What does the professional game have to do now to build on this?
Right, the professional game has to, when I go onto Google and say and search where can I watch women's football, it has to be there for me. And I have to say it's not at the minute. You know, I'm doing a couple of shows today on this and I looked it up yesterday. You know, I want immediately to be taken to the point where I can see all the teams, let's say in the top two leagues, the FAWSL and the FA Championship, that I can see those two leagues games and I can see where Spurs play. I can see how easy it is for me to get to Manchester City's Academy Stadium. I can find out how much the tickets cost and I can find out when they play. The opening fixtures are out. The FAWSL, the top league, kicks off in September. The championship kicks off earlier in August. That's quite some time to wait. So we've got to think about how we keep this going and how we react, and we react quickly. It does make me a little bit nervous, but do you know what? People should start booking tickets now. And here's an interesting thing as well, Ian. There are proposals today to hold double headers with top flight men's sides and the women's sides as well. I applaud that massively, as long as they're in their own individual stadiums. I think what we don't want to see is, trying to grow women's football in a massive 60,000 seater stadium. So that's a really interesting tie-up as well. If you can go to the Academy Stadium to watch Manchester City women and then pop over to the Etihad to watch the men's team, that would be great. And once you go once, please go again. Don't just go once as a token gesture. I know I've been to see my local side. Go again and take your daughters, nieces, nephews, sons, grandsons. Take them all. And it's a totally different atmosphere to a men's game. Yeah, and it's just genuine.
Exactly. Now, I'll tell you what we're doing to build on this momentum. We have got the offside rule coming back in August. And that will be UK and Lindsay and Hayley discussing all of the football, men's and women's. But we've also got the Offside Rule WSL edition. It's going to be a weekly show dedicated to the domestic game. It's going to be packed with players and ex-players and brilliant broadcasters, all of the people you've loved on the World Cup shows on Spotify, and with all of that Muddy Knees Media goodness as well. But do you know what it hasn't got? It hasn't got a sponsor yet. It is up for grabs. If you want a slice of this, and you know you do, get in touch with us now. Now, goddammit. Email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. That is the Offside Rule WSL edition. This World Cup's been massive. Imagine how big women's football is going to be as we build on all of that. Let's build on it together. Thank you, Kate.
Thank you.
What are you going to do with your newfound freedom?
Well, I've got a few shows lined up today, and then I'm kind of back to work, back to my day jobs, and I'm looking forward to the summer and to do some planning. We'll be doing the Offside World exclusives probably as well, with the lovely sit-down interviews with famous names in football. So there's loads of great stuff coming up. But I just to echo what you've said, you know, do it for your kids, for your grandkids, for your nieces. Go and support. Go and help us make this show. There's no other dedicated women's football show here in the UK at the moment. So if we can make this podcast and if we can help to continue the legacy, that would mean so much. It really, really would. We could make such a difference.
That's it. We're doing it. We haven't even got a sponsorship deal. We're just jumping off the cliff and learning how to fly on the way down. If you missed any of those Offside Rule shows and you want to listen to them, and of course you do, there's the in-depth review of the final. There's a special episode all about the Lionesses campaign. Head to Spotify Offside Rule for those ones. And if you want a taster, try this.
There's a chance out of White.
I want us to play like we did in the first half for 90 minutes. We've got to be relentless now. We want to be here for the next 37 days.
Now they're saying the Cameroon players are pointing at a TV screen in the stadium. And they're arguing about a VAR decision that has been made. Now the referee here has allowed this to go on far, far, far too long.
Never seen anything like it.
It's almost as if they don't want to carry on.
I've got to say that wasn't football for me. That wasn't a World Cup last 16 in terms of the behaviour that I want to see from footballers. You know, this is going out worldwide.
It seems everyone is getting behind the England team ahead of their massive match tonight.
Here's Lucy Bronze! What a goal! What a goal! Norway 0, England 3!
You know, I've been dreaming of playing in Lyon and getting to that semi-final again. I've had to wait 4 years and I think that was all that kind of pressure and passion just came out on that strike.
England's Lionesses will bid for a place in the World Cup final and a place in football history later when they take on the USA, the defending champions.
Horan, setting it in there! Header! Goal! Happy birthday, Alex Morgan!
Full time. It's Sweden who triumph in the third, fourth place playoff. So many positives to take from this tournament, so many brilliant memories for this England side, but ultimately they are going home empty-handed.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
A reminder, we're in the studio today with Alvaro Romeo and Duncan Alexander. Duncan, I've just read this note from producer Ben that says you, James Horncastle and Julien Laron will be at the South Bank Centre at the end of September for the first Totally Football live show of the season.
Indeed, yeah.
Is this your debut on the Totally Football Show live?
No.
No.
It'll be third time.
You're a seasoned
pro.
Yeah,
yeah. We were there last year, in fact, but we were there the same night as the FIFA Awards.
Yes, we were.
So
I remember that now.
I'm hoping security will be less this year, but maybe more, looking at that lineup.
I think we were the better ticket in town, to be honest. I mean, I'm not just saying that out of loyalty. I think there was far more entertainment where we were. If you want tickets to see those three and hear Jimbo give the inside scoop of World's Strongest Man and the Great Model Railway Challenge, head to southbankcentre.co.uk. That's Totally Football Live. And that's Monday, September the 30th at the South Bank Centre with Duncan, James Horncastle, Julien Laron and James Richardson. Alvaro, just been passed another note by producer Ben. It says, that can't be right, Ben. Chelsea have appointed Frank Lampard as manager. God, that's come out of nowhere. What do you make of that?
Well, it was very well expected. There are many doubts regarding Frank Lampard because he doesn't have any experience in the top flight. But at the same time, as I've been saying for many years, experience is quite an overrated thing among managers. Because if you check what the best managers in history, when their success came, normally it was at the early stages of their managerial career, the likes of Pep Guardiola, Jose Mourinho, Luis Van Gaal, and so on, got the best of themselves at the age of 40, 45. So I think that Frank Lampard appointment is a brave one, but I think that it could be the right one as well.
All right, voice of confidence there. Let's get the inside scoop on all of this with our pal, Matt Davis-Adams, in-house commentator for Chelsea. Matt, you've seen him come and seen him go. Does this appointment feel any different?
Yeah, it does feel different. I mean, first of all, he's the first permanent English manager of the club since Glenn Hoddle, which is quite a long time ago, 1994. So just from that perspective, but somebody obviously with a not just a link to the club, but quite possibly the greatest player in the history of the club, certainly one of the most significant. So you can't underestimate the importance of that. The transfer ban might have had something to do with the fact that he became a preferred candidate, but I'm not sure how big an impact that actually will have. You know, it's only a couple of windows effectively, and they've already managed to sign Pulisic and Mateo Kovacic this summer. And there's a big Eden Hazard shaped hole, obviously, but that's going to be difficult to fill with anybody. So, I'm not sure if that was a huge part in it or not, or whether it was just the paucity of other candidates. But in terms of for Lampard, it's a perfect storm for him because he's getting the chance to manage the club where he made his name probably far earlier than he would have expected to.
Tell us about the rest of the backroom team he's bringing with him and what that will do for the general mood of the club, because it's often been less than cheery under Sarri, Conte and Mu.
Quite. And the key thing here is likely to be the link between the academy and the first team, which has been sort of divided since Andre Villas-Boas separated the two squads and put them in different buildings at Cobham. So he'll be bringing Jody Morris, who is his assistant at Derby, who of course had an unprecedented amount of success with the Chelsea youth team in his time there. He won four trophies in one season alone. He'll be bringing Chris Jones as well, who was his fitness coach at Derby, who was working with Jody with the Chelsea under 18 team. And the key link that they provide is with Neil Bath, who is the head of the academy, and he oversees everything, you know, from the under 23s right down to the 8-year-olds. So the knowledge of the club from that side of it is something which they will hope enables them to some extent to circumnavigate the transfer ban. Obviously they have a much talked about high number of players out on loan at any one time. Lots of those will be coming back, and lots of those will be looking to push on and make a case to get in the first team. So yeah, Jody, Chris Jones and Joe Edwards, who was the under 23s coach last season and took the under 19s to the UEFA Youth League final, which is the junior equivalent of the Champions League. He will be more involved with the first team as well. And Frank, in his first interview, which was with the Chelsea website and Chelsea app, said that he wants to build that bridge from the academy to the first team, but he doesn't want the perception to be that it's going to be easy for people to do that. And that's important, I think. He gave more minutes to under 21 players than any other manager in the Championship last season. But you can argue, obviously, that it's much easier to do that with Derby County than it is with Chelsea. So I don't think it's a case that we're going to be seeing six or seven players go straight into the first team. But certainly if you're Ethan Ampadu, who's been around the first team for a while without really getting a chance, or if you're Reece James, who was in the Championship Team of the Year last season with Wigan, or Tammy Abraham, who got 25-plus goals and, of course, Mason Mount for Tomori, who played for Lampard at Derby last season, you will be thinking that there is a real chance for you to be in and around, as they say, the first team. Certainly, I think in terms of the League Cup and things like that, I'd be very surprised if we didn't see lots of those players involved.
Finally, Matt, word is that Frank's been promised at least 2 years by Roman Abramovich. That doesn't happen very often. What counts as a successful season this time round?
Yeah, I think a successful season would be qualifying for the Champions League. One thing that Chelsea do put a lot of stock in, more so maybe than any other top six club, is having a decent run in the domestic cups. Obviously, they won the Europa League last season, but they also got to the final of the League Cup. So putting a trophy in the cabinet or getting to a final again of the League Cup or the FA Cup would be good too. But if he could finish in the top four, I think that would actually be a pretty remarkable achievement in a lot of ways for somebody who's managing in the Premier League for the first time, and we're kind of expecting that you know your Wolves and your Leicesters are going to try and threaten that top six a little bit more than maybe they did last season. So yeah, top four will certainly be the aim, but maybe you could argue that the pressure's off him. You know, nobody's expecting any more than that. So if he gets there and maybe he manages to match what Maurizio Sarri did last year and finish third, then that would be a tremendous season.
Matt Davies-Adams will be commentating on Frank's first game in charge away against Bohemians on Wednesday night, which you can only hear on the Fifth Stand app, which is the new name and app for Chelsea TV. So there you go. Duncan, Chelsea's first five competitive games this season are Manchester United away, the Super Cup against Liverpool in Istanbul, Leicester at home, Norwich away,
and Sheffield United. What do you think we'll be saying at the end of August? Will it be Frank in crisis?
I don't think he can go into crisis for quite a long time. So I've seen a lot of Chelsea fans say, yeah, we are pretty bad with managers, as seen last season. But basically, Lampard's got a free run because they love him so much. So
I seem to remember saying this at Southend with Chris Powell, and not every other Southend fan agreed with me.
Yeah, I mean, he starts, obviously, Man United's quite reminiscent. Mourinho's first game was against Manchester United. It's going to be a tough start for him, but, you know, he's got the summer to... Well, most of the summer to work out what he's going to do. Yeah, we'll see. But I think the key thing is he is going to have longer to, you know, to work out what he's going to do than most Chelsea managers do.
Third place in a cup success would probably be a reasonable target, wouldn't it?
That's old hat and that.
Alvaro, this transfer ban he's got, it's kind of good in a way, isn't it? It takes the pressure off a bit. It plays into his strengths of working with young players.
Well, I guess it's good for... because he's... It eases off the pressure on Frank Lampard. At the same time, they have lost Eden Hazard, and probably they would like to replace this player with someone this quality. And unfortunately, they cannot. I think that Frank Lampard is inheriting probably the best English team in the last decade, title-wise. And at the same time, the question will be here what the demands for him are. I mean, if they are demanding Frank Lampard to do as good as Manchester City or Liverpool in the league, which I believe no one will. If they demand him that, then Chelsea will find it extremely difficult, and Frank Lampard as well. But if they try to do something similar to what Sarri did last season, finishing third, trying to win a cup trophy, then it's a possibility. And I think that Chelsea still has the backbone to do something like that. Maybe they don't have a player who makes the difference, like Eden Hazard anymore, but they've got a really interesting mix of experienced players and also some youngsters. And let's see what happens with the Loan is like Mason Mount, Tammy Abraham and all that, that they can step in and make a difference as well. I think that Chelsea is not as bad as we may think, because basically they've been a winning team for 10 years already.
Yeah, the man I feel a bit sorry for is Jorginho, because obviously he was brought in as Sarri's kind of man on the pitch. You wonder whether Lampard will shift Kante back to that role. Given that
it's an easy PR win, isn't it? Just dropping
Kante
back there.
And I mean, Lampard's already said as well that, you know, the likes of Danny Drinkwater is back in contention as well, which you forget how much Chelsea actually paid for him. You know, and he did win the Premier League with Leicester. So yeah, I mean, it is a kind of fresh start for everyone, really.
All right, let's talk about some transfer news. Almost all of these stories have a Spanish angle, Alvaro, so it's a very, very good day for you to come in. Manchester City have signed Rodri from Atletico Madrid for £67 million. Who is this Welsh wonder kid?
He's a tremendously gifted midfielder, a player who plays deep next to the defenders. He's tall, he's physical, but at the same time he doesn't use his physicality all the time to win the ball. He uses rather his intelligence for that. He comes from Villarreal Academy. He didn't fit Simeone's style 100%. In fact, players like Rodri, players like Koke, sometimes you get the feeling that they are underused by Simeone, being deployed sometimes even to play as fullbacks or centre-backs. And Rodri can be the perfect fit for Manchester City, because last season we were demanding someone to come and deputise when Fernandinho wasn't there. In fact, a couple of games lost in the Christmas period were precisely when Fernandinho was absent. And Rodri can be that player that does the Busquets role for Manchester City. He is very intelligent. He is a player who speaks English already, and he fits into the Pep Guardiola system perfectly.
Okay, Manchester United, if you believe the papers, are in for Saul Niguez, which is probably not how you say his name.
Saul Niguez. He's a very, very good player. And again, I don't think that Saul will leave Atletico de Madrid, even though he's in release clause, as far as I believe, is kind of doable for Manchester United, because he's €60 million, which translated to pounds, it's about 52-53. The thing with Saul is that last season he played as a fullback quite a lot, and I don't think that he will like that. Simeone makes his players play that way many times, but I think that this is something that English media has been talking more about than Spanish media.
Okay, Diego Costa to Everton. He only scored 5 goals in 31 games at Atletico.
Yeah, he hasn't done great, Diego Costa, for Atletico, even though I find it unlikely that he goes to Everton. Normally when a good Atletico Madrid striker leaves, goes to China, because Atletico has great connections with the Chinese market. So I think that a move to China, if Diego Costa leaves, which I've put a question tag on top of that, if he moves, I think that it will be more likely him to go to China.
Okay, what's going on with Antoine Griezmann? Why hasn't he joined Barcelona yet? He's just been fined for not attending the first day of pre-season training.
Yes, and there is a controversy between Barcelona and Atletico, to the point that Atletico sent a statement last week saying that Barcelona has been in talks with the player, even when Atletico de Madrid was playing against Juventus, was playing against Barcelona for the league. Well, all that said, the main problem here is that Barcelona wants to pay the release clause of Griezmann in installments and wants to put 40 million up front now. Atletico de Madrid wants the full money now, and probably they won't accept any other thing than 120 million now, because they have to, obviously, with the Griezmann money, they have to pay Joao Felix and release clause and many other signings that they want to do.
These release clauses, I read last week, obviously Rodri went to La Liga headquarters and sort of paid it himself. I quite like the idea of the players just pitching up with a big van full of money and sort of saying, I'm off. I mean, is that how it works? Not the van, obviously, but...
Perhaps in the past, but now it's normally the agent who goes to La Liga premises and pays the money in there. It's normally, let's say in this case, if Griezmann signs for Barcelona, Barcelona gives the money to Griezmann, and it's the player who does his own, who buys his freedom, let's put it that way.
So I reckon that there's definitely a new Steve Bruce novel in a player being given 80 million to pay off his release clause and doing a runner and basically...
Just in a transit van full of cash.
Yeah.
Steaming up the M1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be good.
We should make that happen. We should. There's even a podcast in there. Elsewhere, though, Neymar. What is going on with Neymar, Alvaro?
Well, according to Barcelona president and what he said in last Friday's press conference, there's nothing going on with Neymar. Even though it is said and reports say that Neymar will be willing to leave PSG and that he regrets having left Barcelona a couple of years ago. Well, Barcelona president said that there is nothing over Neymar, but at the same time, his stint as a Barcelona president will finish 2 years in 2 years' time, and he wants to win the next elections. And for that, he is making a tremendous investment in every Barcelona department. In basketball, they have signed Mirotic from NBA. In football, they are about to sign Griezmann. In hockey, they have signed the best player in the world, and so on. Barcelona, we know that they've got many clubs. So I wouldn't be surprised if Barcelona would be happy to have Neymar back again. But obviously, paying 200 million for the player is absolutely impossible, because you have to meet the financial fair play rules, and that will be at the expense of selling Coutinho, who did a good Copa America, or at the expense of selling Dembélé. So some players have to be offloaded probably before Neymar comes in. So that's still not happening, and it doesn't seem that it's going to be something that will happen within a couple of weeks. It will take some time, obviously, and probably that will be prolonged until the end of August.
Duncan, more bad news for Newcastle fans. They've lost Perez. He's gone to Leicester for 30 million. I always thought with him at the top of a not streamlined, not bootstrapped football team might be a really decent player.
Yeah, he's good. He's one of only four players in 2019, so obviously since January, to score 10 or more Premier League goals. Obviously, he was a key man in keeping Newcastle up. And the other three players are Aguero, Sadio Mane, and Jamie Vardy. So Leicester have now got two of the four. You know, and if they get Tielemans as well, they're looking pretty good.
It's very early, isn't it? But could you see Leicester breaking into that top six?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you looked at the numbers last season, both going forwards and going at the back, they probably underperformed given what they did. So the fact that, you know, Rodgers has got a full pre-season, I think they've definitely got the squad to kind of break into that top six, particularly if, as mentioned earlier, Arsenal and Manchester United continue to have woes.
Another team looking to kick on are West Ham, but they will have to do the kicking without Arnautovic, who has now left. And I've got to say, in this day and age, everything's so hyper-commercialised. Players are so often little more than commodities for clubs. It was genuinely heartwarming to see West Ham's Twitter feed. They just kind of let it all out with their emotional confirmation tweet. It read, Marco Arnautovic departs.
Very teletext, I thought. It's a weird one, isn't it? Because the start of the year in January, they didn't want him to go. He was in really good form before Christmas. He almost left. Then he signed a new contract. Then he got injured. Then he came back, scored a couple of goals, and now he's gone. It's quite West Ham.
But yeah, doesn't feel like there's any love lost there. They might be spending all of that money and a little bit more on Maxi Gomez of Celta Vigo. Alvaro, any good?
He's a good player, definitely. I don't think he's as good as Marko Arnautović, even though perhaps he will settle down nicer in London, because Marko Arnautović was never... You could tell that he always aimed more than what he was getting, whereas I think Maximo Gomez knows where his limit is. At the same time, the player wants to go to Valencia, but West Ham United is ready to pay more, which means that Celta wants to sell the player to West Ham United. So this saga will go on until, obviously, a team makes a proper offer, and then whoever gets Maxim Gomez, they will be getting a good striker, maybe not as good as Marko Arnautović, but definitely a very consistent one.
Well, there you go, West Ham fans. You might be getting someone not as good as the man you've just sold to Shanghai SIPG. There are bonus points available if you know what the SIPG stands for, Duncan.
I don't.
Alvaro?
I'm afraid I don't.
Okay, that's disappointing, because I think our listeners will be screaming at their earphones. Shanghai International Port Group, of course.
Of course.
And anyone who's been following the growth of the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative in The Economist will already have known that. Finally, and God, please be finally, Paul Pogba continues saga, transfer, bring me death now. How long is this going to go on for, Duncan?
14 years. But he's gone on the pre-season tour, although reports are that Real Madrid have encouraged him to, because they don't want Manchester United to be grumpy. So who knows? I mean, it's very reminiscent. Do you remember the early 2000s when every summer it was, will Patrick Vieira leave Arsenal and join? And it's like that, isn't it?
It's digging in now. Is he a Real Madrid player, Alvaro?
Well, Zinedine Zidane wants him to be a Real Madrid player, and whatever Zidane says counts a lot at Real Madrid, especially since he came back as the saviour of the club after a terrible season. Zinedine Zidane wants the player. Real Madrid president apparently is not so convinced to cash that money on Pogba, and this is going to be going on until someone makes a move. And probably Real Madrid is waiting for Pogba to ask either the transfer request or to have a terrible attitude during this summer, so his price decreases a little bit.
Part of me hopes he does go back to Juventus, because then he'll become the luxury George McCartney. He'll have gone United, Juventus, United, Juventus. So that'll be nice.
All right, coming up after this, more international football.
The Bradley Wiggins Show by Eurosport is back for the Tour de France.
And there's no bigger privilege than to say the words, Geraint Thomas is our Tour de France champion.
Join me, Graham Wilgos, Sir Brad and our special guests every Monday for unrivaled insight.
They can't be deluded, they have to be realistic, they have to ride to their strengths. And you'd say the man in form at the moment is Bernal. The man who should be commanded the respect is G as last year's winner.
Exclusive interviews and uncanny impressions.
I don't think we're going to sign him next year. What do you think, Brad?
Do you want a massage, Kev?
Bradley said that your team is full of
Johnny in St. Helens.
Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audioboom, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.
Au revoir.
Well, the hosts, Egypt, are out of the Africa Cup of Nations, beaten 1-0 by South Africa. I don't think many people saw that coming. Lots of tears from Mo Salah and the immediate termination of the manager's contract. South Africa will face Nigeria in the quarterfinals. The Super Eagles knocking out the not-so-indomitable Lions of Cameroon in the last 16. Cameroon were the holders, of course. But that's not really the big story. The big story is that Madagascar are also in the quarterfinals after beating Dr. Congo 4-2 on penalties on Sunday night. 2-2 after extra time. They'll play Ghana or Tunisia, who face each other tonight, tonight being Monday. If you want to read more about that, you should read a really good piece by Amy Lawrence in The Guardian about the success of the Malagi football project. She writes, their story is an African version of Iceland, but without the enormous bubble-covered training centres and highly qualified coaches. Duncan, do you have a favourite player in the Madagascar squad?
probably Romario, Baggio, Rakoto, Harrisoa, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That one.
Yeah.
And Madagascar were good. I mean, they're the first debutant team at AFCON to go unbeaten in their first four games since Libya back in 1982. First to score in their first four since Zambia back in 1974. And this campaign is a bit reminiscent of Zambia in 2012 when they won. You know, they're not particularly good, but they're kind of grinding their way through and, you know, fair play.
That's pretty much what England did in 2018. Almost worked for them. A fun fact about the Madagascar game against Congo. The Madagascan president, Andry Rajoelina, see, nailed that one, chartered a plane for 500 fans to come over and see the match. You want some more fun facts?
I do, yeah.
Bet you do. Fourth largest island in the world. Per capita, they smoke more marijuana than the Dutch. That's per capita, just to be very clear after that incident before. Bare knuckle fighting is one of the national sports, but it's called merengue. That can't be right. They had a truly bonkers queen between 1833 and 1839. Queen Rana Valona used to poison her political enemies and had such a thing as the Tangina ordeal as a judicial process in which those who were accused of crimes were forced to eat poison and three bits of chicken skin. And if they died, they were guilty. If they failed to regurgitate all three pieces, and that would probably lead to them dying, they were guilty. But if they could sick them up and survive, innocent. Well, there you go. Worth considering in these troubled times.
I've been to a couple of pubs like that, so...
And half the world's chameleons and dozens of species of lemur live there. But producer Ben would like to point out there are no tigers, giraffes, hippos, or indeed penguins. Moving on to Gold Cup and Copa America in Chicago. It was the final of the Gold Cup between USA and Mexico. Mexico's Jonathan Dos Santos with the only goal of the game there, while over in Brazil... Yeah, some lovely goals in Argentina's 2-1 win over Chile in the third, fourth place game in the Copa America. Big story was Lionel Messi's red card after he got involved in a scrap with Cardiff City legend Gary Medel, aka the Pitbull. Duncan, what happened there?
Well, Messi sent off for the first time since Brokeback Mountain came out, which was a sensation. And it's a continuation of him obviously failing to win an international tournament. I think what has changed, you know, obviously he's inevitably compared with Maradona, but the difference is that when Maradona was able to drag Argentina to the 86 World Cup, the standard of football then was a lot more rustic, so you could kind of do it, whereas modern football is so kind of rehearsed and complicated that you can't just kind of plonk Messi in a mediocre team and hope you're going to win. I mean, 86, we had Mexico v Paraguay, a game which had 78 fouls in it.
78 fouls.
Which is a World Cup record.
That's very nearly 1 a minute.
Yeah.
So maths GCSE, that is.
Yeah, good working out there. But, you know, that's the sort of football where if you are Maradona, you can probably just win a game by yourself. But now it's a lot more, you know, free-flowing. And Messi, you know, looks like he's probably going to end his career without winning an international
tournament.
He was very
upset, wasn't he, Alvaro? What did he actually get sent off for?
Well, for nothing, really. I mean, the ball was going out and he pushed a little bit Gary Medel and... The Chilean player just had a go at Lionel Messi, pushed him three times. Messi didn't even try to defend himself. It was a chest versus chest clash three times. And the referee took the very Salomonic decision of handing a red card to both of the players. He should have been checking the VAR for that, probably. And that's one of the complaints from Lionel Messi after the game. Messi shouldn't have been sent off for that, but But at the same time, he shouldn't have said what he said after the game.
He did go full Didier Drogba, didn't he?
Absolutely, yes. And he was very critical of the CONMEBOL, which is the American UEFA. And he was hinting, well, not hinting, he expressed that the competition was arranged in the favor of Brazil, which is a really, really big statement, really serious, if I have to say, and probably CONMEBOL will take some measurements against it, like handing Lionel Messi a proper ban. At the same time, if I may say, VAR implementation in America has been terrible so far. Copa America was it was desperating to watch Copa America and how the referees were using VAR. There was a terrible communication between the VAR room and the referee, and a few decisions were very arbitrary in the sense that there were some plays that were reviewed and some others that weren't, and you didn't understand why, and which is exactly what happened to Argentina in the semi-final versus Brazil.
Yeah, we've now reached the kind of era of VAR conspiracy theories, you know, supposedly leaked recordings of what the refs are saying in the room. It's, you know, VAR came in, it was supposed to kind of solve a lot of controversy, and it seems to have just trebled it. And even today we've seen Mike Riley say that the Premier League interpretation of it next season is going to be different to the one we've seen this summer. You know, they're going to be a lot less harsh on handball. So it's all a bit random at the moment.
Those of us who were just hoping that everyone could grow up and stop whinging and we wouldn't need any of this are just going to sit there rubbing our hands in glee for many years, I fear. That wasn't the final, of course. The final was Brazil-Peru on Sunday night. Jack Lang was there watching it for us and for The Athletic. And here he is now.
Yeah, Brazil, I think, deserved to win. There's no doubt about that. They played with a decent amount of conviction. It hasn't been a brilliantly showy tournament from them at all, but only conceding once throughout, and that was from a penalty tonight, I think shows the level of control they managed through most of their matches.
Jesus, vem pra cima, Trauco na marcação. Jesus, deu uma entortada no Trauco, tá bonito, cruzamento na segunda trave.
It was never going to be a 5-0, I don't think, like the group stage result was, because Peru had played themselves into the competition, really. It looked a lot better, especially in the semi-final against Chile, and they put up a decent fight here, but you have to say that Brazil's difficulties, such as they were in the second half, were mainly self-inflicted. And Brazil then also had a player sent off, Gabriel Jesus, who was excellent up to that point, probably on course to be man of the match. And his reaction after that certainly seemed to suggest that he kicked a bottle in anger and slammed the entrance to the tunnel with his hand, and was later recorded down the tunnel crying. So I guess at that point he thought he might have cost Brazil the match, but in the end it didn't turn out to be the case. They got another got their third goal later on, Richarlison from the spot, and yeah, it was I think you would struggle to argue that they didn't deserve it on balance of play.
Praticamente o gol do título, o gol da conquista, o gol da Copa América!
Alvaro, Brazil then, champions of South America.
The best team of South America, by a mile or two. The rest of the team, they are not as good as Brazil, simple as that. And I believe that probably the best football you can watch on the planet is played in Europe at the minute, not in South America. It's been a long time since South American clubs could challenge European clubs in the Copa Intercontinental. That happened in the 90s, in the 80s. But South America still kept the country level to prove that they were as good as Europe. And I believe that with the problems of Argentina, with Cavani and Luis Suarez getting older for Uruguay, Colombia being inconsistent, Brazil is the only team that South America can rely on to perform well in a World Cup. It's a Brazilian team that doesn't have the art that had before. Sometimes they play with three midfielders, sometimes they play with two. They've got a lot of youth at the front, which is very good looking ahead to the Tokyo 2020 Olympics, because Richarlison, Gabriel, and possibly Everton will be playing in the starting lineup for Brazil, which is terrific for them. And probably Everton has been the player that has stand out over the rest. A really quick winger who has done a terrific job on the channels, and also he has proven that he's ready to play at European level for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he ended the tournament as the joint top scorer, something we haven't seen in England, Everton being top scorer since 1987. So that was nice. And his goal, actually, in the final was the first goal in a Copa America final since 2011, because there have been some stinkers since then. So it was just good to see some goals.
All right, that is it for another lovely, bright and breezy summer edition of the Totally Football Show. Duncan, what are you up to for the rest of the week?
Just kind of... Season is approaching now, so a bit of preparation. I've had quite a relaxed June.
Alvaro, any plans for the week?
Well, I've been on holiday for a couple of weeks, so I am in acceptance now. I am back on track, and I've got 2,000 emails to catch up with, which is great. And I don't know if England is excited about this, but the Tour de France is already on, and I want to watch every single stage because I love it. Oh. I truly love it.
Well, I'm with you 1,000% there. So.
Well, you know where you can hear more about that, don't you? The Bradley Wiggins show with Eurosport.
Fantastic. Have you seen what he's doing in the tour?
Of course I have.
Yeah, he's sat on the back
But tell me, just in case I've forgotten.
All right. He's sat on the back of a motorbike for Eurosport, in and around the peloton, to use football parlance. Peloton. Yeah, which... It's something they've done on French telly for quite a long time, but it is pretty cool.
All right. Get all over that and get all over that Bradley Wiggins podcast. You find it, you know, wherever you usually find your podcasts. On Thursday, Rafa Honigstein will be with me and Michael Cox talking about the great Bayern team of 2013. That is the last of our summer series of zonal marking specials. That's not easy to say. Thank you for all the kind words about that. I'm very glad that you guys have enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed doing them. In the meantime, keep up to date with all things Totally by following us on Twitter at The Totally Show. Lots of things to keep you updated with. And we will see you next time.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And don't forget to check out our other football podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts, and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really, and here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK, so that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.